Hi, this is Anne Marie Williams from Public Words Project. I had a wonderful interview with a longtime friend and mentor of mine, Andrea Shorter from San Francisco, California. We did this interview over the internet to the best of our abilities. There are some glitches, but we both believe in persistence and we went forward. There's two sections. I've broken it down into two sections. The first one is going to cover things from who Andrea is, where she came from, to Martin Luther King. And the second portion, part two, will tell you more about who she is and what she's doing now. So please listen to Andrea Shorter and forgive any fun little glitches that happen to be there. We'll call them character. Enjoy Andrea Shorter. Thank you. So I want to thank you for joining me via technology to be part of this podcast, Public Words Project. So I just want to ask you a couple of questions, and then I want to focus on your expertise. Is that okay?
Sure.
So the first question is, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
Wow. Well, I have lived the majority of my life in California, first in Southern California, out in Riverside County. And then the last 28 years, I have been here in San Francisco. I'm originally from the great state of Indiana, so I'm a Hoosier, and that might explain a little bit of my sort of nasally way of speaking. If you're from Indiana, parts of the West, I don't know what it is. I try to get rid of it, but I guess it's become something of an enduring and maybe even endearing part of my speech pattern. But I've lived in Indiana and moved to Southern California. Went to school at Whittier College, graduated, and worked for the Assembly Legislature for a bit, and then moved to San Francisco in 1991, and have been here ever since.
I see, the great city of San Francisco. I'm going to ask you a real fun question. I ask this of everyone I interview in the podcast. What is your favorite food?
Ooh.
Good one, right?
My favorite food. You mean like a cuisine or, you know what? I love Italian food.
Okay.
I love Italian food. Yeah.
What specific item in the Italian menu do you enjoy most?
Ah,
I'm making you choose, Andrea.
You're making me choose. You know what? I love to make. I'm a really good Italian food cook.
Okay.
And I like simple things. I make a terrific pesto.
Nice.
And now that I'm thinking about that pesto, I'll be thinking about it for the rest of the day. So thank you. Thank
you're welcome. So you put the pesto on what? Pasta, bread, chicken?
You put it on a little bit of everything. You put it on, definitely on good, fresh pasta, chicken. I love to have it, you know, make a little side pasta, but put a little on some roasted chicken. And, I like garlic.
You're going to have to come down to Central Coast and hang out with Jeannie, because Jeannie is Italiano. And she has fantastic Italian food.
I grew up
with it.
So
the second question is, are you from a family of public speakers? I mean, I've seen you speak. I've known you for a long time. Just tell me a little bit about your family background. Like, is everyone outgoing? Are they really good public speakers? Or is this something you learned? Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, I grew up in a family that was pretty conservative. I mean, we were from Indiana, and we had in our particular religious upbringing, my dad was an elder in our congregation. And so he was, I would suppose, of our family, something of a public speaker, because he would have to speak before the congregation.
Okay.
And I remember as a kid, my brother and I I have two younger brothers, and this is well before my youngest brother came along, we would play. And I had this baton, you know, the twirling baton. Uh-huh. And we would use it, we would set up and play as if we were talking before the congregation. So as little kids, you know, we would kind of emulate or you know, mimic what my dad was doing. So he was really the first that I had ever seen in anyone in my family that would speak before a group of people. After that, I think that moving through grade school, my first experiences of, you know, quote unquote public speaking were before my classmates. You know, you would get up and share a book report or show and tell or, you know, what have you. But I think that the first sort of real public speaking, so to speak, probably didn't happen until my middle school or early high school years as a student and participating on a school improvement committee and going to speak before our Board of Education with other students. So mm-hmm. that was really my first, I think, early starts of speaking publicly or before a group of people.
Now, is that something that, I mean, did you struggle? Did you have to think about it? Or was just, you know, you played into it? Like, tell me, was it when you were playing with your brother and mimicking your dad, was there any kind of struggle with that, or you just fell into it naturally?
I think just at that time, I mean, you're just playing around. I mean, yeah. We just, you know, there wasn't any pressure. There wasn't any fear. Each of us was the audience, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, or we would, you know, put up, you know, our toys and, you know, dolls and teddy bears, and they were the audience.
That's a great image. I love that.
Right. And so in that regard, no, I mean, I don't think that there was any particular fear because we're just playing together. But I do think that a number of people that when they think about public speaking, it is a performance. And as kids, we really do, you know, enjoy performing, right? Mm-hmm. You hear so many stories. I watched the other night that I was trying to catch up on the Tracy Ullman's show. Tracy Ullman's show. Right. And if you look at, you know, in the beginning, it's really cute. She has, you know, it's like her as a little kid. And she's basically saying, you know, I'm as a kid, I used to stand before the mirror with the brush in my hand and, mm-hmm. you know, just basically perform. And I'm still doing the same thing. You know, she says, I'm still doing the same thing. And what I love about that is it does bring you back to that spirit and that sense of freedom and imagination of performing and the joy of just imagining things and being someone or, you know, putting yourself in sort of this wonderland that, you know, we do as children. But ultimately what you're doing is practicing performing. And few people actually take that kind of spirit into the public square, right? That's something that we do on our own. I mean, you know, maybe unless you're Beyonce or you go on to be, you know, Jay-Z or Ariana Grande or whomever, but that doesn't happen to most individuals. But I think that the joy of a part of the trick of it, I think, in terms of public speaking is, you know, really hopefully being able to get back to that sense of comfort and freedom and joy where possible. You know, not every public speaking engagement is necessarily joyful. But
you're not lying.
Yeah. But you know, and the question is why not?
Yeah.
And so,
well, I was just going to ask you that. I was just going to, mm-hmm. but you prefaced it. So, I mean, what is it? I mean, as children, I mean, not all children are comfortable playing and, you know, cause the world's not a perfect place, but I mean, for kids who like to play make-believe and cowboys and Indians and dolls and whatnot, or space astronauts, what happens? I mean, like, there's a sense of freedom and joy. And if we could just carry that into some part of that into adulthood, I think everyone would be a lot more comfortable in our lives and we'd have more dynamic speakers. But quickly, what do you think the thoughts are on that regarding, like, how does it transfer? How does it change?
Well, and this is just an editorial comment. You're my dear. No longer playing cowboys and Indians. So I'm just going to say that.
Okay, that's fine.
Just kidding. But nonetheless, I do think that in seriousness, I actually say that on purpose, because I think part of what happens is that people begin to edit themselves, right? As we grow older, certainly, you know, how we present our ideas, how we present our opinions, etc. We become more and more, I think, just sort of self-conscious. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. And there's more, we put the pressure on in terms of being right about everything that perhaps we're saying or our opinion. We don't want to be challenged. We don't want to be, we see objection. Or potential objection to what it is that we're presenting or how we're presenting as really rejection, and can take it very, very personally. And when in fact, that's not always necessarily, the case. I think it also depends on what type of, when we say public speaking, it's very broad. There's all sorts of public speaking and you know, how you're speaking, speaking as a business person, speaking from the pulpit, right? People are operating perhaps from different frameworks and different traditions, traditions of speaking.
That's a great point. And
so I've met a number of really, just some of the greatest speakers of our time. You know, I've been in the presence of folks like Reverend Jesse Jackson or John Lewis or I think that one of the greater public speakers is a former superintendent of education for California, and that's Delaine Easton, who actually, just ran for governor. Mm-hmm. I enjoy hearing her speak because I love her passion and her the points that she makes about education. But she is, I think, a really good example of someone that comes from a type of tradition of orating, right? I think that she fits somewhat into that mode of maybe how Bill Clinton would speak, or how JFK, or other political speakers.
Right.
I think it's something that not necessarily in the midst of those kind of fiery, political pulpit pounding type speakers. So I think the history and the traditions of public speaking or orating are somewhat changing. It's not to say, however, that, for instance, I love a good Baptist preacher. and that has not necessarily changed as much. And there's a reason why, they certainly imbue a kind of cadence and rhythm and, power in the way that they're speaking from the pulpit on a Sunday, in a Sunday sermon. Civil rights movement is very much, having been led by not only, folks like, led by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, again, the tradition of speaking from sort of that pulpit, how you move that crowd. But a lot of the civil rights movement was very much infused with sort of a spirituality and you know, really based and rooted in the traditions of the Black church. So even today, outside of church, when we hear civil rights, you know, movement leaders, often they are still, you know, using that same kind of, a similar kind of cadence and style, because that's the tradition of civil rights movement.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that it depends where you're comfortable. Mm-hmm. And some types of speaking, or waves of speaking publicly or to an audience, may not translate well. You know, if you're a really great, you know, civil rights Baptist preacher, how you're speaking before a business audience, right. maybe, you know, that may or may not translate as well. It just is not within, you know, the framework or the traditions of how you present to that audience.
Okay, so that is the end of part one with Andrea Shorter. Hit the restroom, have a pee break, get some water, and then settle in for part two. That's coming up next. Thank you.